Well, those were some awesome, interesting things that you did, Charles. Josh, did you also do interesting, awesome things?
No, everything I did was boring.
Boring things.
Boring, you say?
Bore no. us, Josh, bore us.
Roll for host.
All right, I'm already on there.
Generate 5, 2.
20 bitches.
Oh, nice.
Good time to waste your natural
third,
20.
Third time in a row.
Oh, I think I'm the only one to get a 20, aren't I?
I think so. I've won.
Okay.
I've
but that's way
won.
Worse. That's nothing to be about proud of. You should be ashamed of that.
You see the article on the rounded edges on D20s?
No, what's the deal with
and
that?
And the statistical analysis of like different brands of D20s and which Whoa. Ones roll which numbers at which
Really?
Yeah. Like regular right D20s that are slightly rounded on every edge.
Yeah.
Totally favor like half the numbers.
Really?
And rarely
because
come up on the other
the specific
numbers.
Molds that they're using have like slightly less or slightly more roundedness.
I don't know. Yeah. The process of the rounding like makes it not random enough. It influences the bounces to curve in one direction, but because the curve is not like a perfectly perfect radius or whatever, you know. So the ones with sharp edges, are 90%, you know, like way more random for every number except one. And the one number is the opposite side of the one with the mold bump. The one that has the mold bump is always going to make it unlikely to land on the opposite side of that.
So you really need like
so that's
a
on
metal,
14.
You need like a metal D20 that doesn't have any, it doesn't have divots. Like the numbers aren't material carved out or missing. Right, that they're just like painted on, and yeah.
All I have believe to, it. All I have to say is mold bump is my new is my new death metal shoegaze band. Okay, we are the Escort Mission. This is the Escort Mission podcast. Welcome to everyone listening.
Welcome to you who have come to the Escort
Mission.
Yes,
you can do anything at escortmission.com.
Escortmission.com.
The infinite is unknowable.
That was Josh explaining D20s, and that was Charles doing his best impression of Zombo.com. Yes, this is episode 23. This is going to rule.
Man, I really want to watch ZomboCom right now.
Welcome to ZomboCom.
The impossible is unimaginable at ZomboCom. Okay, so I just want to mention one thing at the top of the show here. We have upgraded at the show. You can't tell there because you're only listening to us, but shit is baller in here now compared to last week and the weeks before, which were decidedly unballer. We have some pop filters. Thank you for going to our Amazon link and buying things and giving us money because we were able to purchase something. So I'm using a bright orange ass, like, you know, windscreen, like old school CBS news on the street kind of pop filter thing. Chaz has got
bright pink, yeah.
Bright pinkish stuff, and Josh has got glorious green. And I don't care how useful they actually are, we're 10 times more professional now that we have them. So, Josh, thank you for being here. How you doing?
Cheers.
How you doing?
Good.
Yeah?
How you doing?
Good. Charles, how you doing?
Well.
All right. Yeah. Well. All right.
I'm doing good.
Could you tap that guitar behind me?
Show has started.
Okay. All right. That is the ceremonial gong for the Escort Mission. Charles, how you doing? Let me know. What's been going on with you this week?
I'm doing well. My week has been pretty good. First of all, a couple Kickstarter things. I'm wearing my California headphones, which I have had actually for a couple weeks now, but declined to mention them until now. So they're cool. I'm glad I got them. The build quality is superlative. The Josh didn't exactly like the tone. They're supposed to be, I don't know, treble-ish.
Emphasizing
the treble and the mid-range and not bassy enough. So
the build quality is phenomenal. Yeah. I will have to agree. I love the like cloth cords.
Yeah, the cloth cord is pretty sexy.
And the
which disconnect.
headphone jack reduplicator and the I don't know. They feel freaking nice.
They look nice too.
But I don't love the way they sound, but they're not for the music I listen to. They're for the music you listen to, which
Yeah.
Perfect.
Cool. So that's cool. And I also on Kickstarter, I just bought into another Kickstarter called The Perfect Heist, which is a board game that I'm super excited about. So it supposedly will be a board game oriented around heist movies. So like The Italian Job or Ocean's 11. So you like assemble a team. You assemble like the computer hacker guy and the explosives guy. And it's like the Dirty Dozen, right? So you play, you each get a number of dudes and you play out these like heist scenarios. So
that sounds awesome.
It looks,
that does sound cool.
Yeah, it has cool art, cool like cartoony heist art. Like,
there's really no board game that does that at all?
There's this one.
Sounds like it should have been done, right?
Wow. Yeah.
It does.
So perfect.
The guy's been working on it for like 7 years. He needs the Kickstarter money to finance the paying for the art. You know, he's got like sample art and art from the artists who have done like a couple freebies. So he needs to pay the artists and then get it produced and whatever. So
that should be a future show, I think.
I'm psyched about it.
If it comes out and you get it, we should do that.
Yeah, yeah.
Did you contribute enough to get a copy?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Sweet.
I did. So
done.
Yeah. I'm excited about
that.
We had a presidential debate. Did you guys watch that?
That occurred.
It happened.
Did you also watch, we had the O'Reilly Stewart debate.
I watched the real debate through the filter of The Daily Show and Colbert, but Josh and I, did you watch the Rumble?
So I watched like
the air-conditioned room.
I watched the first half hour of it, which is, the whole thing's free on YouTube now. But
free? Really? Oh, I thought they were going to charge like $5 for it or something.
Well, I think they did. Like, I think if you watched it live via the pay-per-view, it was $5.
They also said, subsequent to the live, you were going to be limited to 3 streams for your fee. So it sounded like it wasn't going to be free afterwards.
Well, the whole thing's on YouTube.
Yeah,
so.
That's funny.
All right.
Maybe it's down by now. I watched a half hour of it, and then Justin and I wanted to go to bed. But yeah, I thought it was
totally sweet.
Yeah, it was funny. I watched the first half hour, like I said, it was funny.
It was less of a waste of time than the actual debate.
Yeah, the actual debate was, you know, I don't know. People say Obama lost and Romney won. Other people say...
It depends on how you measure winning.
Other people say Obama was playing like 12th dimensional chess and was losing intentionally, you know, super politician style.
He was drawing, you know, like Kate Winslet, Titanic style.
Yeah,
Romney.
It was like Aikido politics. Yeah. I mean, that one is a little hard to believe, but people are saying like it will galvanize the Democrat. If any members of the Democratic Party were feeling complacent, like, oh, it's already won, then this gives them a reason to, like,
speaking uninspirationally will inspire people.
It's tough to buy into. I don't know. So, anyway, that was boring.
But did you expect it to be anything but?
There have been good presidential debates. Yeah, totally.
Well, but I think didn't we all know that Obama's strength is not... You know, going on the offensive in a debate, and it's more he's an orator, but he's not necessarily a debater,
right?
So
he doesn't have the practice that Romney has.
I don't recall the previous debates that he gave like specifically, but I thought he did better because he does
the ones
very well
McCain?
During some speeches and stuff. Yeah, I thought he did better against McCain, but
I think that's just McCain sucks more balls.
But as far as win lose, I mean, if you want to say Romney was more aggressive and you know. Lied with more confidence.
And basically, that's what the American people want. Obama did not lie offensively enough.
Right? And you know, stomped on Jim Lehrer harder, right? Then I guess he won. But it was unfortunate that Obama didn't call Romney out on his lies, you know, immediately as much as I wanted him to.
Yeah.
I was kind of screaming at the TV a little bit. I think a lot of people were. Because I literally had to pause it and look up the fact checks before I could continue.
Yeah.
Even after 15 minutes in. And, you know, of course, even Obama told some half-truths, some stretches and stuff. But when you look at the complete fact check, like, Romney just outright lied too much.
Uh-huh.
And it was brutal. He said, like, 3 times, I'm not going to cut taxes for the rich. And that's a direct lie. It completely contradicts everything he said about his tax plan so far, which is basically big tax cuts for the rich. And so he's like, he's in a secret way running on a trickle-down theory.
Yeah,
and
definitely.
Instead of like just announcing, you know, I'm in favor of trickle down.
I mean, at the national level, once it gets to this point in the race, the candidates move to the center, right?
Yeah.
You know, so what they say on the stump and what they say in the debates always varies.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah. Anyway.
I wanted to go back a little bit to the rumble between O'Reilly and Stewart. Yeah. I thought it was really interesting. You know, I've seen, I think I've seen Stewart and him, like, you know, have conversations on The Daily Show or like debate and stuff
on each other's shows. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's very entertaining. They obviously have like a very kind of deep respect for each other at the same time that they completely disagree with each other on like everything, which they even mentioned at some point, like near the end of the debate, where like, you know, having the discourse, even vehemently disagreeing with your opponent, is totally worth doing. You know, like it's not about putting two people together and making nice and becoming friends. You know, it's about actually having a real debate and disagreeing about stuff and, you know, getting both sides out. And, you know, they did a really good job, I think. And whereas I might have gone into it thinking that I would probably agree with Jon Stewart on most everything, I don't think I did that necessarily. I think they both had good points, and it really always seems to come down to, like, you know, no one is evil or stupid. They just really believe strongly in a certain philosophy, in a certain way, which may or may not be the best way, may or may not work, may work now, may not work later, may work for our country, may not work for a different country. You know, it's so multifaceted, and, you know, our news media always likes to try to boil everything down to like the smallest, like snack size.
A guy on the left side of the screen wearing a blue tie. Yeah. A guy on the right side of the screen wearing a red tie.
You know, to keep us complacent or whatever the conspiracy theory is. But so it's really nice to see two dudes just like who know stuff and intelligently debating about it, and not just putting on a show like the real debates, where they're trying as hard as they can not to create gaffes, not to create sound bites.
Yeah.
You know, to just give a speech, basically.
If you like that, I heartily recommend, you can get this as a podcast, Shields and Brooks, which is a weekly segment on the NewsHour with Jim Lehrer, on PBS, on the PBS NewsHour. It's Mark Shields, syndicated columnist, and David Brooks, New York Times columnist. It is like the best, most professional, most cordial version of that, you know, pundit debate that you see on cable news. But those guys are both phenomenally intelligent. They're super plugged into politics, and they're just incredibly cordial and awesome. It's the best thing. It's like 10 minutes once a week. You can download just that section as a podcast, or you can get the whole show, but that's really, really good.
That sounds great.
I show love that shit.
Yeah. I bought a car this week, and for my wife. Not much to say about
it. You bought a city, fact.
I bought a Tucson, a Hyundai Tucson. But it's so easy to buy a car. I was mentioning this to the guys before the show. Like, if you are a member of Costco and you're a member of AAA, or you have been to TrueCar.com, you just say one of those three things, or better yet, all three, to the dealership, and there's just so much information available to the car buying consumer at this point that it's really hard for it's not easier necessarily to get a great deal, an incredibly awesome deal, but it is really easy to not get totally fucked by the car dealer. Like, they do not have the power imbalance advantage that they once had. So that was a surprisingly pleasurable operation rather than the kind of dreaded car dealership experience, although it still sucks. They still do the same bullshit where they like, okay, let me go talk to the manager, walk out of the room, you know,
we check
blow
in the
back. Butt, you know, watch the game, come back, okay, here's what he said, kind of thing. They still
no matter how easy you think it is, it's still hard on people with certain personality types, right? Yeah. If you are polite and you're not used to haggling, and you know, you have a hard time saying no to people, then you can still get ripped off no matter how much research you've done.
That's true.
Because, you know, I thought even going through Costco, the recommended route, like, they still tried to negotiate some stuff in. That I thought was, you know, kind of, I thought it was going to be negated. I thought that wasn't even going to happen. I thought, I was like, why are you wasting my time? You know, you have to be able to say no to them. You have to be really educated to make it an easy process.
It is really shady. But then it's that whole still process easy. Is shady because, like, So I totally agree. I left guy. You know, they of course start with, so what do you think you want your monthly payment to be? You know,
oh, God.
Zero.
Don't even say that.
It's the worst. Like, what are you looking to get out of your trade in? It's like, what it's worth, motherfucker. What are we doing here? Right. And the guy left the room. Went back.
100, 200.
We had come to a rough understanding on what the purchase price should be, and he came back, and it was like it was $5,000 more than what it was supposed to be.
Right.
But that there was no total for that. It was like, okay, well, so he's like, here's the total, and we came down a little bit on the purchase price, like we had talked about. Yeah, I'm working for you. And he's like, and then we have this and this and this and this is four things, which added up to like $5,000. It's like a better security system that this dealer installed, and like, you know, paint treatments and all that same bullshit, like the undercoating. And I was like, I don't want any of that. What are we doing? And so you have to like force him to take it off. There's no total on the little printed out sheet, right? Like, it
I
is still
knew,
a
I knew
very
it wasn't
shitty.
As easy as you
I was just
going
to say, I love how we started with this. Like, it was a great experience. So, like, it was still pretty shitty.
It was very, it's very shady, and they use a lot of shady tactics. I definitely agree. However, I felt so much better armed with the information, like, knowing what the dealer invoice cost is, knowing what the dealer probably actually paid based on the kind of. Because now, most people know the dealer invoice, they've been pushing up the invoices and adding in like these back end spiffs to the dealerships. Knowing that stuff, like if you, there's just so much more information, you can be much better informed much more easily. So that was cool. News. There was some good news that I read recently, which is that Microsoft is defaulting to direct cash payments in Windows 8. I am super pleased about that.
Hopefully coming to the 360.
I am really hoping that happens on the next Xbox, because I have always completely hated the Microsoft point system.
Spacebox.
I think it's total bullshit. Yeah. It's anti-competitive, or it's not anti-competitive, it's anti-consumer, in my view. Like, I think it's deliberately done to confuse consumers.
Well, and it does, and not only confusing, but they specifically set up how many points you can buy, and that is not congruous with the things they sell, so that you can actually go through all of your points. Yeah, they want you to carry a balance to where your money is stuck in their system. You can't get it out.
And I was going to talk about this later. You know, even in the Sony PlayStation store or whatever, they use real dollars and cents. Mm-hmm. They don't use space bucks, but they still have specific limits on exactly how much you can purchase.
So you can't just buy a game for the amount it costs.
Right. You have to buy at least like $5 increments.
That's
or whatever.
Such bullshit.
They're not the only ones who do this. Doesn't Facebook do this with like Facebook credits or...
Do they?
Yeah. I mean, you can like buy things. I think you can buy credits on Facebook to
use
on games. You know, like all the free-to-play kind of games. You can't just pay $1 to build a farm in Farmville. You have to buy Facebook credits to
then
buy it.
You know, Charles, if you want to water your farms in Farmville, like, automatically.
I can sort of see Facebook making an argument for that, in that they have, like, a mediated currency that everybody goes through one purchasing platform for, and then that can be used for multiple games.
Uh-huh.
So I can kind of see it.
How is that not Microsoft's way, though? You buy one thing that can be used across multiple games.
But the money...
No, Facebook is evil. Come
I
on,
guess,
whatever.
I guess. But if it's like tokens...
Don't defend Facebook.
Tokens, if it's tokens that can be used in varying amounts for different
things it's
inside of many different games, I don't know.
There's no reason to have an intermediary. There isn't, except to screw you over in some way.
Yeah. And the best possible choice for consumers right now is what Josh does, which is wait for the points to go on sale and then, you know, buy a lot of them at once.
Right.
But I don't like doing that, because I don't want to make a number of small loans to Microsoft, right?
Yeah.
Which is in effect what you're doing.
Yeah,
you're getting
a
decent.
Yep.
Yeah, you're getting a good return if you get, say, 20% off the points. And if you're going to spend that money on it anyway, and you do it before some certain time where the interest that you could have earned by not doing it, like, there's some opportunity cost to doing it. So probably it's a good deal if you're conscientious about it. But having a big balance might lead you to spend more frivolously and buy something you wouldn't necessarily have bought otherwise.
Yeah, early in the console's life, I knew I was going to spend a shit ton of money, you know.
Yeah.
But now, we're approaching the end. I don't know how soon they're going to abandon it. I'm buying most stuff on Steam, not Xbox. And so I do have a balance that I've stopped adding to that I, you know, we're going to see if I get through via natural purchases or whether I'm left with a balance that I'm like, I guess I'll buy a shit ton more Rock Band songs.
I was just thinking that's one of the main sources
what
of things to buy.
What can you spend 100 points on?
I love harmonics, and I'll just give them the rest of my money.
Yeah.
I remember when we used to play Rock Band, like, all the time.
A lot, yeah.
You know, I just
miss those days.
I just listened to some Coheed and really wanted to play Welcome Home and
I think
that
we
was one of my
on
favorite
drums.
Ones.
I think we should get together and play again. I think it's just as fun as we remember.
Should get John down here.
I think it just has to do with the song selection.
What do you mean?
I mean, last couple times I played Rock Band, it still wasn't fun because other people were choosing shitty songs.
Oh well, yeah. I mean, obviously you have to control the music. Yeah, you can't only go with the lowest common denominator because then it won't necessarily be good, right? We'll get pros together to play. How about that? All right, what else, Jazz?
I saw a Tesla Model S on the street.
Ooh.
A real one.
I really thought you were going to stop at Tesla.
I saw Nikolai Tesla.
Or I thought you saw Tesla in concert.
So I don't know all the letters by heart. The
That's
S
an expensive
is
car, right?
The sedan.
Yes. Yeah.
That just came out a couple months ago.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
holds like seven people.
It goes good, right?
It's not like a supercar. This is a like BMW 5 Series competitor. The most expensive ones, there's like three levels. The most expensive one has like a 300 mile range and is like, you know, 100 grand.
Oh, this is electric.
It's a big ass sedan that has
but it's not that big, a
shit ton of lithium ion batteries.
It's like only a crap ton
in its undercarriage or something,
like 7,000 individual batteries.
It's got a shit ton of lithium ions that are all underneath, so it's got a low center of gravity, so it's got like crazy performance and handling. And yet it can go 300 miles on a 100% electric charge, which is, I think, the only car that
that's
even
pretty good,
gets
right?
Like anywhere close
it's amazing.
To it.
Yeah. Great, yeah.
The only other electric cars on the road get like 100 because they're nickel metal hydride.
Yeah,
right.
A lot of the electric cars are actually lithium now. The Nissan Leaf is lithium.
The Leaf is lithium?
Mm-hmm, the Prius's batteries are lithium. But the difference is Tesla is using lots of small cells, and so they optimize the way they charge, and they can optimize, I don't know, they can keep them alive longer. And
instead of just having like one huge
deal with
battery,
heat.
You mean?
Right, yeah. Mm. But basically, it was just rad because the car had come out like, you know, a week earlier. They started making deliveries, and I saw one.
What
but
color
yeah,
was it?
They have, it's like a maroon, but they have different levels, and the cheapest one, which, you know, gets only 200 miles on a charge or something, is
pitiful.
I think it's only like 60 grand, which is well within the kind of BMW 5 Series, Mercedes E-Class, like luxury midsize automobile prices.
Yeah.
So anyway, that was sweet. I was psyched to see that. I watched this movie, or before I get into media, one other thing. The HTC One X Plus was announced, and that phone looks pretty dope. But then there's all this flurry about the crazy Nexus news. Like, everyone and their mother is making a Nexus phone, apparently. Like, LG is explicitly making one, or is the most confirmed, although not actually confirmed by them.
So not confirmed.
The most most well-substantiated rumor,
it's binary, I think.
is that LG is making a Nexus phone. HTC is apparently making a 5-inch, like, Nexus mini tablet phone device, the Nexus 5. Sony apparently might be making one, an Xperia Nexus, so that'd be like game oriented.
And there's supposedly an upgraded Galaxy Nexus by Samsung.
It's supposed
with
to be
just better specs.
Yeah. Like a Galaxy Nexus Plus, basically. So that's rad. I really want that to happen because I love the idea of Nexus being a platform within Android where it has to be stock Android. It's none of the skinning bullshit. You get the updates immediately. Like, all the phones conform to a standard,
yes,
right?
Definitely.
Because that's the best of both worlds, right? It's like every, you know, Android itself is still open source. And so HTC and whoever else can go out and they make their crazy, you know, Moto can do the Droid and their weird skins and do whatever you want. But if you want to make one of these Nexus devices, then you have to just make it pure Android, you know. But you can still do some variation with the hardware, and just as long as it meets minimum standards. So,
and they're making some exceptions, but it's still pretty good. Like, it still took a little while to get the Jelly Bean port for the Verizon Galaxy Nexus, and I still have like two Verizon apps on there.
Mm-hmm.
It's not 100%, but it is easily the, you know, the cleanest, one of the cleanest things on the market.
Right. Dramatically better than, like, for example, the One X Plus, like I just mentioned, is coming out before the One X, its predecessor. It's coming out with Jelly Bean before the One X gets the upgrade to Jelly Bean.
Right.
That sucks. That sucks so hard for a One X owner. Like, I would be, I would be incredibly pissed.
It's reality, though. I mean, the One X owner is going to be lucky if they even get Jelly Bean.
Yeah.
Because a lot of times the manufacturers don't decide to release the patch at all.
Yeah, that would suck. Anyway, I'm definitely going to be getting, well, I can't say definitely, but my plan at the moment
unconfirmed,
is to get one of those get one of those Nexi once they show up.
Nexuses.
I'm actually pretty interested in the Sony one. Gaming focused, that'd be cool. Anyway, I watched this movie called Unstoppable. It's the train it's not a heist, it's a train runaway train movie.
Is that Denzel?
Yes,
with some other dude, some
with
white guy,
Captain Kirk.
Right, the
Chris,
new Captain
Chris
Kirk.
Pine. Yeah.
Chris Pine. And they stop.
No, Shatner.
And they stop a train or something.
There's a runaway train.
Spoiler
and they
alert.
Stop it. They stop that train. I'm going to just spoil it straight
but
up
it's
right now.
Unstoppable, not stoppable.
It's an outright lie.
Did you sue them for false advertising?
Got on that.
Wait, why
shit.
Did you even see that? That wasn't even like a
it's
hype
on
movie
Netflix.
Oh,
because
it was
on
just,
Netflix
it was
and
there.
It was there, and I was like, oh, I sort of wanted to see it.
How many things that can't be stopped?
How many stars did Netflix think you would give it?
I don't recall.
Negative
12. I didn't
12.
Really check. I just saw it, but I would not give it many stars.
This I guess is, if you share your Netflix account, then those stars aren't very accurate.
Oh, man, it's totally ridiculous. Netflix thinks I love Dinosaur Train and Thomas the Train.
What, you
and
don't like
Mighty
Dinosaur
Machines,
Trains?
Yeah. Like Mighty Machines, the crazy like show about big machinery.
Mine's really...
Man, Jess is into some weird stuff.
Yeah, big time.
Mine's really quite accurate. If whenever I have the balls to click on something that it thinks I'll give 5 stars, even though like the description, the title, the stars, like nothing about it sounds like that intriguing. It's always a phenomenal movie that I love.
Netflix knows you.
Anyway, this movie's not good. Like, I would not recommend people watch it, except one thing about it is actually quite good. And that is, it reminded me a lot of these other movies from like the
other good movies,
70s and 80s that were, there used to be a type of movie that was just like this super self-contained story. And there would be a movie about a cop solving like one kidnapping, right? And the whole thing took place in a day and a half. You know what I mean? There would be these incredibly... There was no larger picture. There was no twist ending at the end that connected it to, you know, the Illuminati or this, you know, much larger conspiracy that our hero then also solved that problem. You know, if this is just
solves
a movie...
the Illuminati.
This is a movie about a train that is going down the tracks and then somebody tries to stop it and they are successful. Like... It's just
brilliant.
A movie, and that was cool. I really like that. You know, it's a total throwback.
You're
in that
praising
sense.
Its lack of ambition.
No. I'm praising its
simplicity,
you know, simplicity
okay.
and cohesive.
Right.
Very
it's
few movies are like
purity,
that.
Mike.
Right, you're right.
It's a high purity level.
High purity right, level. Not a goma of a movie.
No.
You reminded me of Superbad.
Yeah,
like when you see Superbad and you just analyze what it was about. It was about two dudes like trying to get laid and go to a high school party.
So life.
Like one
life.
Night. Like the whole movie takes place over like one night.
Yeah.
And they did basically nothing.
That's very
but it's
rare
brilliant.
Now. Very Seinfeldian.
Most movies are totally, they go way off the rails.
I get it. Nice. Those are like train.
unintentional pun.
Badoom.
I started reading The Walking Dead graphic novel, which I have not consumed any Walking Dead
of any
type before now.
And
so, it's good. I'm like a chapter in. I hadn't realized that was an Image comic.
Is that important?
You guys apparently didn't collect comics. Image is a publishing company.
Well, I know who Image is, but why is it significant that it's Image?
I wouldn't have expected. I thought it would have been like in the kind of, it feels
Marvel-ish.
Like a more DC type product. Like,
what does that mean? Oh, so it's not edgy enough is what you mean?
No, it is edgy. Like, well, I mean, Image is generally like, just TNA. That at least when I was collecting comics,
blame Rob Liefeld for that.
Yeah, exactly. So I would have put it in like maybe Dark Horse or DC, like DC Vertigo. You know, they're kind of darker, more serious stuff. And I was a little bit surprised by that. Anyway, so started reading that. It's pretty good. I'm like,
on your Nexus or physically or what?
Physically. I've got a book. I borrowed a book that is this
thing. The whole compendium.
The compendium.
Fancy.
It's a good book.
I am indicating a you know, about 2 inches worth of comic
book. His fingers extended in
the air.
It's
a good book and a good value. I think it's reasonably priced on Amazon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
People should buy that from our Amazon link.
Ooh, nice plug.
I recommend it. Yeah, it's good. They're at the farm, so for whatever that's worth, for those of you who've seen the show or read it, yeah. And I also started reading a novel called The Devil in the White City, which is about the Chicago World's Fair in like 1903 or 1908 or something like that. And so it's actually not a novel. Rather, it's a it's like a dramatized history. So it is. It is
some more boobs and killing.
It's the actual history of what happened, paralleling these two, the first America's first serial killer and the first serial killer to receive like actual psychological study, and the sort of driven, close to driven mad architect who designed the World's Fair.
How is it dramatized, though? I'm curious. What does that mean?
Well, it's told like a story. And so, but it's like incredibly well researched. So it is, it is literally what happened. It's very, very well researched with their memoirs and their letters and stuff. But it's, you know, told as a complete story.
It's not like a dry textbook.
No.
Factual account of.
No, it's told, it's written as if you didn't know it, you could just pick it up and read it as if it were a novel. But the guy does a foreword where he says everything between quotation marks is from a letter or a piece of, you know, an eyewitness account or a historical document of some kind. So it's all
one of those books where the preface is super critical to read.
Totally. But it's interesting. It's really fascinating. There was some crazy shit that happened, and Chicago does not sound like a fun place to live in that era. So anyway, I'm like two chapters in. I'll talk more about it once I'm finished.
Sounds cool.
That's what I did this week.
Well, those were some awesome, interesting things that you did, Charles. Josh, did you also do interesting, awesome things?
No, everything I did was boring.
Boring things.
Boring, you say?
Bore us, Josh. Bore us.
No, all right.
Sorry.
Oh, let's talk about games first. I'll talk about games first. So,
did you even talk about games at all, Chaz?
No.
I don't think you mentioned a game.
I played some NES Tetris.
Okay, that's okay. That, right. That was assumed.
Level 19 is hard as shit, guys. Oh my god,
it's not as hard as level 29.
Oh my god, come level on. 19, you guys. Oh shit,
those blocks are falling. Like
that is hard.
Like downpour.
It definitely made me realize that the like kind of knockoff Chinese built SNES controllers that I have are not acceptable if you need the fast twitch required for level 19.
The ecstasy of order guys would laugh at you.
Use your PS3 controller or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, Josh, what's up?
Okay, I need to tell you a story about Super Crate Box.
A lovely lady.
Okay.
And her three very lovely girls.
All right, so...
she bringing them up?
What?
I was just going on with
her. Oh, sorry. No, say, I thought the next line was they had their
she
hair
was bringing
golden,
up three very lovely
Stay on the
girls.
Ball.
Golden girls.
So, Super Crate Box, I heard it just came out on Vita, and so I was intrigued for something to try on my Vita that I haven't pulled out in a while. But it's also on Steam and iOS. And so I looked on Steam real quick, and it was apparently free. Mm-hmm. So I was like, oh, I better try this on Steam first while I charge my Vita or whatever.
Let me play a game while I wait to play my game.
To see if it's good. Right. So I download on Steam. It's free, and it's fun as hell. And... we don't have to. We can talk about the game a little bit. It's pretty unique and brilliant in my opinion. It looks like Joust, but it's
or
controls
Super Mario Brothers,
or just Mario.
Yeah, like the original
the very
Super
original
Mario Brothers arcade game.
Right.
Yeah. Which was just Mario Brothers, I think.
It controls like a side scrolly jumpy, really fast, good control like Super Meat Boy. But you pick up guns constantly, like a Contra or something. And your gun swaps every time you pick up a box. You want to pick up as many boxes as you can.
Yeah.
Crates.
Crate box.
Of course. Crate box. And and dudes spawn at the top. And they go down a set path, and they try to get to the fire at the end. And so it's almost like a tower defense game. You want to kill the dudes before they get to the fire at the end, because if they get there, they respawn as double fast, like... demon spawn
angry
versions
dudes
of themselves, right? So you want to keep the spawn clear, and you want to pick up boxes, and every time you pick up a box, you change weapons. And so it's really fast, but also if you have a hard box to reach at the top right by the spawn, you need to like stay on the ball, not just rush towards it. You need to keep the spawn clear and push them back all the way to their spawn point and to go get it safely. To try, but the whole point of the game is just to get a high score.
Yeah.
And once you get into it and you learn, you know, you feel, you get the feel for it, you learn the strategy.
It's a one hit kill.
It is a one hit kill, and it restarts extremely quickly. So it's like an arcade game that you could easily see dumping quarters into back in the day. It totally looks like a 30-year-old game or whatever. It is just crazy fun once you learn the strategy and get into the feel for it. It's I played it nonstop for like 45 minutes just on the first level without changing any options at all just to try to get a high score. And I realized, yeah, this is easily worth a purchase. So now let me tell you about my Vita experience. All right. Vita was charged. I knew I was going to have to update the firmware because I haven't picked it up in a while.
Yeah.
Updated the firmware. Took like... Yeah, keep doing that. It's gonna be a while. I did like, I don't know, 3 reboots or something in the process of updating firmware. God damn. And I don't think it changed anything noticeable. All right. So then I launched this. I update a bunch of apps. All my games, I like check for updates to download them just because I... You know, I'm updating it. Might as well update everything available.
Update completionist.
Yeah. All right.
Update so all the
then
things.
Then I go to the store, PlayStation Store. All right, let's look for new releases. The new release list is chock full of old fucking Final Fantasy ports. Like,
it's Sony. Come on.
They've been releasing so many old PlayStation 1 games, PlayStation 2, PSP, PlayStation 3, PS Minis. Like, all these other games for other platforms are, it's like, clogging up the new release list.
It doesn't sort out stuff that is not available for Vita.
Oh my god. Okay. Wow. So, if you go to all games,
yeah,
then you can sort by console.
Uh-huh.
But if you go to new releases, it's everything mixed.
That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
Right?
That's the worst piece of UX I've ever heard.
To I'm the like, only games I want you can to play. See new releases that are good and made for the platform.
Does it also show Xbox games?
I was saying, it's like going to the iOS App Store and seeing Android totally. Games.
Well, they
that
are.
You
can't play. They all run on it, right? It's all ports that now work on the Vita.
Okay.
It's not ports
so it's
that don't
that
work.
It's all stuff that is actually at least playable.
Yes, it is all stuff that is newly playable on the Vita.
Okay.
But they're generally old PlayStation 1 ports.
Gotcha.
Because there's not a lot of Vita releases.
Gotcha.
Okay, so I dig through that list for a while and don't find anything that I'd seen lately because I was looking specifically for Super Great Box, but also a couple other things that I didn't know the name of that I just remember seeing on a blog. Oh, upcoming cool Vita releases. Okay, I should check it out. Not anywhere to be found. I'm baffled at this point. So I resort to the all list, and it's not under super. So I go, Jesus Christ, and I resort to the search function and type in the entire name, Super Crate Box, nothing to be found. So I'm like, did I mistake that it came out last week? So I Google it. So I find blogs that say it came out last week and have like reviews and stuff, right? And I'm like, what the fuck is wrong with my Vita and the market, and why isn't this playable?
What is going to happen?
Right. So I finally find, after reading like 3 or 4 articles, I find a blog that says it launched as part of the new launch of PlayStation Mobile. What the fuck is PlayStation Mobile? So I have to look for articles that talk about the launch of PlayStation Mobile, and I finally find out that PlayStation Mobile, I think, I don't know everything about it, I think is their new like multi-platform gaming platform for like the Vita and possibly upcoming fucking Xperia Android bullshit phones.
Yes.
I don't know. Right now, I think
that's probably going to be the name.
Right.
Xperia Android bullshit phone.
I think it's only on Vita right now. It's like PlayStation Mobile store on the Vita.
Uh-huh.
So,
Zababa.
All right, so I'm in the PlayStation Store, and remember how I was looking under, silly me, new releases, or under games, or search? Wrong! You need to find the PlayStation Mobile button, and like, change to this other store! So then I'm in the PlayStation Mobile Store, and that's where that shit is listed. So,
man, I really can't believe you explained that whole thing.
Awesome. Sorry!
Just kidding.
And it's not over yet. So... I find Super Crate Box, and guess how much it costs? It's free on Steam. It's $1.99 on iOS.
$10.
It's
$5. $5.
Okay, not that bad.
$5.
It's $3.50.
Oh, whatever.
It's
Cheapskate.
It's almost twice as much as iOS. All right. But I'm like, it's a good game. You know, I want to overpay for this game on the Vita at this point, even though, like, the store is confusing bullshit. So I finally buy it. Like we said earlier, I cannot buy a $3.50 game without giving them $5.
Yes.
Mm. So now I have $1.50 balance, which is also bullshit. So I basically paid $5 for it.
Only in the PlayStation Mobile store, or can you?
No, it's in
the
whole PlayStation Network. Okay. I think. Oh, I hope. I hope not. I didn't even consider that.
Oh God! Woo. You just threw your money away.
Oh, Jesus. All right. So. Then I go to launch it, and it doesn't launch. It throws an error.
Oh. Oh.
So I delete it and re-download it. I watch the download. I make sure it completes it. It really installs successfully, and I launch it again, and it still doesn't launch. It throws an error.
Wow.
So I Google that error code. No one on the internet knows about that error code.
Oh, Jesus.
Like, I found two forum posts, that were unanswered, like empty thread posts.
Yeah.
Oh, those are horrible. I hate those.
I know. Within the last week, talking about this Chopin game under the PlayStation Mobile and something else under the PlayStation Mobile. So apparently it was a whole PlayStation Mobile-wide problem that there was no answer to. So I literally went to the Sony support to file a customer service complaint, and they said they would get back to me within 1 to 8 hours, and they did not get back to me.
Yeah, ever.
So luckily, I just tried it now, and it actually launched, and I can finally play the game that I paid for, which is awesome. But Jesus Christ, what a clusterfuck this platform is.
That's unbelievable.
No wonder, like, Sony is
failing.
You're
supporting it with your money.
And no one is buying this shit. No one can even find the store to buy the shit they want to overpay for. Oh my God.
To not be able to play because of bugs.
Oh my, to not be able to, I can't believe the whole list of problems that
is ridiculous.
There. Wow. Sorry to drag on. I'll get to something more fun.
It's very interesting, but this is exactly, that's bullshit.
It is totally the sign of an engineering company, not a platform company, right? Like Microsoft is a platform company, and, you know, fuck them because they are doing things with the platform that we don't necessarily like making it not gaming, totally gaming centric, but at least, like, as a platform, it works. It's got its foibles and it's got its space bucks and everything, but new releases are the new releases, and, you know, you can find the stuff you want, and the search kind of works.
Man, like, and I've never started up a game and then it threw an error and I couldn't play it.
Yeah.
Man, that picture of Fry, like, holding out the stack of cash saying, shut up and take my money.
Yeah.
That needs to be, like on name tags of everyone that works at all these companies, anywhere related to, like, their front, their marketplace, their front end, like, make it easier for people to buy things.
Yeah, it's amazing how often companies don't get that right. Like,
it's the one thing you need to get right.
Yeah,
like, you can have a shit product if, as long as, like, it's easy to buy, you'll make money.
We're fooled by pretty screenshots. Just let's
people
give us
are.
Your money.
Put screenshots. There are no goddamn screenshots in the market.
Really?
Actually, the PlayStation, the new mobile section of the store actually has some screenshots, which is a welcome improvement. I have to give them credit for the weird part of the store you can't find actually having screenshots while the store I want them to improve doesn't.
Wow.
Anyway. All right. Real quick, Bad Piggies, Rovio.
Yeah.
I started playing that.
It's actually quite good.
I really like it.
Is it?
It's good.
I've played it.
It makes you think a little bit more than Angry Birds.
It's a combination of a few types of games. Like, it's like a Rube Goldberg machine building device where you have a construction phase and you put objects together and you make a little cart or a launching device or whatever. And then you hit go. And then when you hit go, you don't just watch it. You also interact a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, explode things or turn on fans or whatever. And then you try to get the pigs to get the stars or whatever. It's pretty fun.
Yeah.
It's quite good.
Cool.
There might be a little bit too much randomization for my taste to really love it long term, but there are a ton of levels and it's quite good. Let's see. We saw Looper.
Let's talk about that later.
Let's talk about Looper.
We're talking about it right now?
Yeah.
Fucking sweet.
Are we gonna do mad Looper spoilers?
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Okay, everybody.
So we're gonna warn the shit out of skip ahead 20 minutes or something. You don't need to hear what the
Do we want to say like we're about to spoil something before we say a spoiler?
No, we're gonna spoil the shit out of Luke from the start.
So starting now, you know, maybe you can either or I'll put in the show notes the time point where they can jump back in,
okay,
so as not to be spoiled, and you could even dub it into the audio track right then.
That'd be work.
That would be work.
But no work would be just finding out what
you,
time
you
it
overestimate
was.
How much I care about this podcast.
So it'll be in the show notes, fuckers.
Just skip ahead.
Read like, text.
20 minutes would be safe.
It'll be in the show notes.
Go see the movie right now.
It is good.
Go it's watch real the movie. Good.
We'll
real
say
good.
It's
totally
good
worth watching. Yes.
Spoiling.
So you guys both mentioned that there were.
There was a thing in the beginning.
Things that you each had questions about that you guessed wrong about.
I was
something?
Curious. There was something early in the movie that got figured out about 15 minutes in that I was initially a little confused by.
Okay, what were you confused by, Mike?
I don't want to say it because I don't think it's what you said, and I'm going to feel
I'll
dumb.
Tell you what I was confused
All right,
by.
What were you confused by?
All right, the whole concept where they explained his job as a looper was to murder fools. Like 30 years in the past of when they wanted.
Yes.
Right? I literally thought every time he went and killed somebody in the field, I thought he was going 30 years back in time from where he was then.
Okay, thank you. Yes, you were confused about the same thing.
Is that literally the same thing?
Yes.
Okay, I thought I was just dumb.
I thought he was going back in time to kill people.
Okay, so when you... After he kills the first dude in the first scene, it flashes like Kansas 2044 at the top.
Yeah, I thought time.
And I thought 2044 was the future. I thought present was our present, like 2014 or 2012 or whatever. So I was really confused that he was killing people in the future when I thought they were sending dudes back 30 years.
Okay, that was the same, but the opposite of what I thought.
Okay. I was confused
Almost
about
the
what the present day was.
Right, me too. So, but I thought present day was him depositing gold bars or silver bars.
Which it was.
Right. And hanging out with buddies.
Yeah.
Right? And I thought every time he did a job,
he went back.
Oh. We went backwards 30 years.
Oh,
to go.
And you thought he went forward.
To go shoot a guy in the field, and then he came back to present day.
Right, yeah. I was
and you thought
he
went
was going
forward. Yeah. He wasn't doing any time travel when
he
was
only
doing
the
killing.
Dudes being killed were doing the time travel.
Everything, his whole universe, for most of the beginning, like took place in this year that happened to be 30 years earlier.
Young Joe never time travels in the movie.
Right.
Yeah.
The 30 years later are where everybody's sending back from.
Yeah.
Basically, once they got to the montage of him living his 30 years life, I was like, duh. And it made perfect sense, and I don't know why I was confused.
It made perfect sense, and I'd have to go back and watch and see why we were confused by that at the very beginning.
I was
maybe
not confused
was bad
by
editing.
That, but I think it was because I had just seen a bajillion trailers for this movie, and
I'd
I think
seen
they
nothing.
Explain
I knew
it
nothing
in
about
the trailers.
It.
Hulu was showing me nothing but Looper trailers for like 3 weeks. So anyway, yeah, I think it's because I basically had that spoiled or it wasn't explained.
Right.
I can't think of anything specifically that gives... I think he does a little voiceover, right? He says, in 2044, time travel hasn't been invented yet, but...
In 30 years, it will.
In 30 years, it will be.
Right.
Like, I think that's your only clue, and if you miss that or mishear it or something, that's it.
Yeah, there's like a quick one-liner that
quick
I missed.
Quick little
or
voiceover
something.
Thing, yeah.
Yeah.
All right,
so once that got cleared up, the movie... Yeah.
Yeah.
Was brilliant,
right,
at least
next.
In general.
Opinions? Anything else? What else you want to say?
Very good. Has the same kind of time travel paradox issues that all time travel movies have, but hangs together as a narrative for all of that, and is pretty satisfying, pretty fun to watch, you know?
Yeah. It was exciting.
Okay, I have a huge spoiler opinion.
Yes.
All right.
Before the movie started, we were watching previews, and we saw like 5 previews, okay? And 3 of the 5 previews were for upcoming horror movies featuring children monsters.
Yes.
Right? Like Paranormal Activity 8 or something, and I don't remember.
Generic. They literally look like the same trailer 3 times.
Did you see all those?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. I couldn't believe that. Like, how many horror movies are they fucking
Little
making?
Did we know.
There's a door slowly creeping open. There's kid outside. He's
with children that are either demons or murderers.
Little did we know
ghosts.
How
prescient.
Yeah.
Yeah, how prescient those previews were, because I had no idea the movie was going to go in that direction.
Yeah.
That was very unexpected.
We should have known after three of those trailers that the movie we were watching was about to turn into one of those.
The actor, though, the kid actor they got to play that part,
phenomenal.
Was really amazing.
Really
that kid
good.
Was fucking creepy as hell.
Yeah.
He acted the shit out of that.
That kid was great.
With the slow-mo scene where he trips down the stairs and starts screaming,
yeah.
And that guy's heart literally, like, explodes. What is going on? What happened
to
this movie?
They really build to that level of tension and uncomfortableness between him and his mother really well.
Yes.
Like, dropping little hints here
she's
and there.
She's got the panic room.
Panic room safe. It's like, wow, what's going on there?
I thought they did such a great... I really hate typical comic book movies that show you the origin of a villain.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just this really, like, it's... you know, telegraphed that he's going to be the villain from second number one.
Yeah.
You know, and I thought they dealt with this kid and his relationship with the mom and, Joseph and / Bruce's decision of whether and how to treat this kid. I thought they dealt with it really well because you feel empathy for the mom. She's doing her best. It seems like she would be a good mother given the right opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
But the kid has just this irate temper. And it's like, this kid's going to be a problem kid if he doesn't get raised right.
Yeah.
Right? But if she's doing something wrong, maybe it's too late. He's already going to be the villain. So you really want to shoot the kid, you know, at some point. But then you're like, wait, no, maybe we just need to give her a chance. We need her to, like, raise the kid in a good environment and then he won't become the villain, right?
Yeah.
And so I was struggling back and forth with that, just like his character was.
Mm-hmm.
I thought I was dealt with brilliantly. It was a great movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's got the issue that I have with the kind of the time traveling business is that if the instant old Joe comes back and doesn't get shot,
mm-hmm.
I would have liked them to that moment change a ton of shit about him. Like, because as soon as that happens, his whole future trajectory would then be completely different. Right. Because that him not dying there and then living the whole same 30 years that he has instantly changes or should have such a vast, you know, change could conceivably have so vast a different outcome to his life that he could have just disappeared and not been there. Obviously, if that happens, they have no movie, but they should have had like a bunch of weird shit happen. Like he's instantly wearing a bunch of different clothes and he has a weird scar and, you know, hair, right?
So they could deal with it a number of different ways. But if you draw the loop diagram where basically there were two parallel tracks of aging from 30 to 60
mm-hmm.
or whatever the ages were, right?
Yeah.
The first track had to happen first because he had to have a wife and then
right.
he had to get sent back and then he had to want to save his wife,
mm-hmm.
right? And so he had to like get shot. He had to shoot himself
yes,
the first time
for that to happen, yeah.
right? But then the second track has to also occur for the rest of the movie to occur, right? And you can't nullify the first track immediately and say that never happened because it had to have happened in order for him to have let him go the second time.
Right.
Right.
But the instant so, that he does let him go, everything about that first track hasn't happened, right? That first track
but
hasn't happened at that point.
Well, it kind of did happen. They both kind of happened.
So
it's
kind of
like parallel universes at that point.
The movie does a good job of like essentially telling you not to worry about all that bullshit and just enjoy it
yeah.
as a movie.
Yeah.
In what is the best scene of the movie, which is the diner scene, right?
Yeah.
Do we agree that that is the best scene in the movie? Like by far.
I didn't rank them, but it is a very good scene.
I don't know.
Oh man,
know.
that was my favorite by far.
I don't know.
So
yeah,
good.
I don't know. It's just I don't know. I didn't really have like I didn't rank scenes either. I don't know. I didn't feel it
but
was
just
like
thinking back,
so much
like,
better than the rest of the movie. I don't know.
I totally thought so. That was amazing. Like that was why you do that movie. It's so good. I just love the
you should watch Booth at the End for Christ's sake.
I've watched the whole thing. But right. the not the fact that they're sitting at a dining booth. The conversation between you 30 years from now and you today, I just identified with that a lot. I love that kind of My Dinner with Andre feel about it. The the kind of total like disgust that you feel for yourself. Like if you like today, we can all think back to things that we did when we were, you know, dumb shit teenagers and go like, that's such a fucking stupid thing to do. I wish I could tell myself not to do that. Like you just feel some disgust about yourself. And I thought that was played really well. I really enjoyed
they
that.
They both like, thought they were the better one.
Yeah.
No, I'm like, the young one.
Fuck you, old man. Yeah. I know what I'm doing. Yeah. And he's like, you're such an asshole. God, I hate you. Who is me? Like, it's the disgust you feel for yourself. And then he's right there in front of you.
Yeah. I mean, I can totally see that. But at the same time, I'm not sure I would have that reaction of like my elder self is
not everybody would, and that's the thing,
I think because I wouldn't necessarily have that reaction, maybe that's why I didn't think.
You don't feel like regret and anger toward things that you've done in the past?
Well, no, Bruce Willis, old Joe's,
no, I'm saying you personally, if you were in that.
Well, no, but I'm saying, but right, the older version of myself having disgust for my younger self, yes. No, yeah. I'm talking about the reaction of the younger self to the older self. I don't think I would necessarily have that reaction.
Right.
I don't think it would be so adversarial.
I mean, the reaction and him really wanting to kill him was because he had prepared for that his whole life, right?
Yeah.
His whole job was designed around that.
Right.
He knew he was going to kill himself
eventually
30 years from now. So the 30 years from now himself was his enemy, like naturally. He'd been thinking about it for years. You know?
And like envisioning the moment, and he has got his whole life planned
out. He'd already dealt with it. It wasn't a hard thing to deal with.
Planning for what was coming.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I guess I can't identify that because I've never had to deal with
that.
That's
why the movie was also really unique.
Yeah.
Like, who would even fathom that? When has that happened in another movie?
And the casting was so fucking great. Like, Joseph Gordon-Levitt and Bruce Willis, like, I don't know. I think they were a perfect match. And the fact that they, you know, quasi tried to make Joseph Gordon-Levitt look like a young Bruce Willis.
That part.
It was a little iffy, but
it was distracting.
I don't think it was that distracting. I don't think it was perfect, but I think it was a good effort. I think it was a really good effort.
His acting performance was phenomenal.
Yeah.
And the stuff he did with his voice and mannerism was great. And I thought that was fine. Like, I thought that would have been totally enough. They didn't have to do the prosthetic stuff. That I found weird and distracting, and I was always like looking at it like, that's not how he looks, you know, just in the back of my head, that's not how he looks. He shouldn't look that way. It looked weird. His performance was great.
They both really did a good job, but I wouldn't agree that it was the best casting. It was good casting in the sense that they chose two stars that both did a great job.
So who would you have put in their place?
I would have put people that naturally looked more like each other, or put one in severe makeup, and I wouldn't care about stars. They always cast shit based on who's going to bring in
ticket
that's
sales. How you get movies made.
True. Like, but
that's
I
how
mean,
they get it made, yeah.
Going down that route, at least they chose well with that conceit.
Yeah, they're good actors. They did a good job.
I don't know. I've always liked Bruce Willis. That's the part he always plays, is the like
he just plays
overburdened
himself.
Old action dude.
He plays himself, yeah.
He's good.
Doing his Bruce Willis
so,
thing.
Good movie?
Yeah.
Real we good. All agree? All right, sweet. Go see Looper.
Winner. All right, check the time
Jeff
so
Daniels,
we can write it down.
Surprisingly good.
Check the time.
Yeah, just glance at whatever the time or something.
Okay.
It's been about an hour.
All right.
So jump back in at that time. Now. You're checking in now.
You're looking at now. Everything that's happening now is happening now.
Looper spoils have ended now. Okay.
we talked a little bit about the debate, but I wanted to just briefly mention that an even better thing to watch than the debate or the Bill O'Reilly John Stewart debate.
That platform thing was brilliant, though. John Stewart's platform.
It was funny.
Goddamn. That was a great visual gag.
But if you want to watch something that doesn't piss you off at disagreeing with, like,
watch Fuzzy Puppies.
Watch Bill Clinton's DNC speech. It's phenomenal. And he's, you know, virtually 100% truthful all the way through. I read a fact check.
Except when he lied about the intern.
I read a fact check on it afterwards, and he only stretches the truth minorly a couple times. Like, when he talks about healthcare, he implies that the healthcare costs haven't risen as much because of Obamacare, but it was really because of the recession. But that's just like a subtle implication to get an applause line. And he says 95% of all Americans when he meant to say 95% of working Americans, which means 76% of all Americans. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That's pretty minor too. That might have been a mistake. Anyway,
dickbag.
It's a brilliant speech. It's really inspiring. It's so good. It makes you want to vote for him again.
Right.
That's pretty much what everybody's been saying. Yeah,
It's true. You should watch the whole thing. It's 40 minutes. It's on YouTube.
Had you not watched that during the convention?
No, I didn't waste time watching all of it. Yeah. Jesus Christ. They have, it's like 3 days long. There's two of them.
Well, not the whole convention, but his speech.
I didn't watch all the speeches,
but I watched his.
All right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's awesome. You should watch his.
Yeah, I think Jon Stewart.
It's super fact oriented. Like, it's all about math. It's really good.
It wasn't math overloading, I didn't think.
No, it's not like he's doing math, but he introduces all the subjects as like,
just,
I'm going to lay out
he
the
just
facts,
states
I'm going to do the
facts.
It actually works on like Fermat's last theorem or something, cool. Right?
Great.
It was ridiculous.
Agreed. Co-recommended.
I'm still playing all the
basics. You're basically going over all my points. This is great.
I have something that says SMBC. I don't remember what that is.
Saturday Morning Breakfast Cereal.
That's right.
Which is an excellent webcomic, which we had an impassioned, polite discussion about earlier today. You want to sum that up for us?
Yeah. My summary is that Saturday Morning Breakfast Cereal is the second best comic on the internet.
Behind Garfield, obviously.
Or ever made.
Garfield Maybe. Without Garfield is pretty good. Have
I still
that?
Read that one. It that still gets good. Me. Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, it took me a few months or whatever of having an occasional good one linked to me before I was convinced and started reading it for myself. But I highly recommend that if you are one of the people that XKCD is the only comic that you read every day, make Saturday Morning Breakfast Cereal, SMBC-comic.com or whatever. Make it your second one because it's brilliant. It has a tiny bit of overlap, but it mostly covers like kind of different types of subjects.
Sociology, philosophy, less math and science.
Yeah. It's brilliant. It's hilarious. It's insightful. Sometimes it's just dumb jokes.
Every once in a while, that's a good thing.
All right.
We had a big fight about how
impassioned good... discussion.
Yeah. Yeah. How good this was.
We won you over? Like officially?
You definitely linked a bunch of ones that were you guys were just doing a shitty job of linking me comics because I don't read that comic regularly, and the ones that you had sent up until that point totally made me think it was way average. And then you sent a bunch of average ones, and then Josh really got to getting and found like seven
well,
or eight really
he,
good
he
ones.
He went on the that, warpath yeah. about it. Yeah, he you,
he's like I will. So Josh is a, quite a good shit. Advocate for this.
So
for
I don't,
this comic.
I don't like my favorites of all time. I don't remember my favorites of all time because I have a terrible memory. I have bad like word recall. Even right, I didn't even remember Joe for a movie I just watched. Right. I don't even remember Joseph. Like, I can't believe his name is Joseph. That sounds weird. It doesn't sound like his name unless you say his whole name, all three names in a row.
Right, yeah. He is Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
Anyway, so all I did was I clicked back, and just read the last 30 days of them. And there are more than...
Yeah, but you linked me 8 out of 30, right?
At least, yeah. So, like, 10 out of 30 are brilliant. And I thought 20 out of 30 were easily worth reading and linking. And even the last 10, the worst 10 out of 30 were still good. And so we almost never link any of them anymore because they're all good.
Yeah. It's one that doesn't need to be linked because we believe you should just be reading it and you're going to like it. Like the odds are high that you would like it anyway. All right. Well, those were definitely some awesome and interesting things you just talked about, Josh. And you took like half of the things that I was going to talk about. So I've got like almost nothing to talk about.
You talked too.
So I'm looking right now at my iPhone 5, which I did get recently.
What color is it?
It is not black.
What color is it?
Which means it is a scary fuchsia. No, it's white.
It looks actually,
it is
like
white
really
and silver.
Silver.
It's white. It's like a white face, and it's got silver on the edges.
It's got the same anodized aluminum look on the edge, and in the back, it's sort of like a brushed white, kind of matte
it
white.
It feels different on the back below the camera and above the smaller
The back looks silver in the middle.
Which I'm not super crazy about it feeling different. I don't really know why. It seems incongruous. I don't know. I don't really know why they did that. It's like a stripe, but... Otherwise, I like it. It's lighter. It's faster.
I think it's because the middle portion is aluminum to give you a stronger body. And then the top and bottom are plastic so as to get cell reception.
Okay. I mean, I'm sure.
Oh,
yes.
With cell reception issues.
Yeah.
It's ugly because of cell reception.
It's not ugly, but it's not as
I mean, usually that's
cohesive.
Why you'll see, usually on any cell phone, if you see a materials change, it's because that's where the antenna is. Mm.
And the black one is the same way. It's just.
Yeah.
It's dark, and this is light. But anyway, I wanted to get a white one because the iPad 3 that I have is white, and I wanted them to match. I know. And my wife has black and black for those things, so now we can tell them apart.
Black and black.
We never skip. We never, Never pick up each other's phones accidentally. So I like it. It's lighter. When I first picked up my coworker's iPhone 5, it was like, holy shit, this thing is like hollow. There's nothing in there. Like, it's so light. It was so light compared to my iPhone 4 that it felt almost cheap, almost like a toy.
I think it's heavy.
And now it just seems totally normal after having it for a day. It feels normal. Yeah. It feels good. The other one feels like a rock, and this one feels great. It doesn't take long to convert, basically. I love it. I think every phone should be this light.
It definitely feels very light the first time you pick it up.
Yeah. But now it feels heavier than it did then, but it still feels light. So read into that.
It's the new normal.
Right. But there's not much to say about it. I kind of basically ruined my iPhone 4 accidentally, so it was dead.
Not on purpose?
I did not purposely ruin my iPhone 4. No, I did, actually, because I like spending money. So that's why I got an iPhone 5. I wasn't necessarily going to pick one up right away. But I just wanted to mention, the only thing interesting about this is that I know people who pre-ordered it, like, you know, when it first came out, who has still not received their phone. You know, I got my phone, 10:30 p.m., went on the Apple Store, ordered one, said, pick up at my local Apple Store. The next day I walked in, 5 minutes later I had my iPhone. So basically pre-ordering is bullshit. Buying things online, good idea.
Not necessarily, because...
pre-ordering the iPhone 5, bullshit. Picking up at the store,
what happened is that you got lucky when you went to... when you went to order. Had you been like 15 minutes later, you could have missed that day's allotment. Like, you happened to go on at just the right time to get it. I mean, that's what happens, right? So they have, if you pre-order, you're guaranteed to get it, although it might take a long time.
Yeah.
If you don't, they reserve a certain number that they send out to retail on, you know, a daily or weekly basis or whatever. And if you happen to go to the store and reserve one, then you get it, but you're not guaranteed to get it.
Well,
so you got really lucky.
I guess I did.
Good on you.
And... yeah, but
if
you're
willing to risk it, and if you can spend a lot of time like on the store refreshing it, you'll probably get one faster than if
you pre-order. I mean, I guess because of luck, it made it feel completely effortless. Yeah. Like, I didn't feel rushed. I didn't feel like I was beating a system. I literally went on the store, and it took a while because I had to like find passwords and stuff for things, and I still had plenty of time. And I don't know. And there were people lined up that morning trying to get one, like without ordering it, just, you know, hopefully getting one that wasn't reserved, and I just walked in and 5 minutes later had it. So anyway, that was cool. So the only game that I've really played lately is Sleeping Dogs for the 360, which was mentioned by Josh a couple podcasts ago. He loved it. It was like his game of the podcast, basically. I've only played maybe like half an hour, 40 minutes of it, so I've only done like a few missions, but it's really good. I'm enjoying it. So far. I mean, it hasn't gotten to the open world part. I'm still kind of guided, like, do this mission. But the combat is pretty fun. I think the dialogue is pretty believable. The voice acting is good.
Does it have an option to play in Chinese with subtitles?
It does.
Sweet.
I think, yeah.
Maybe I'm thinking something else. It's a hybrid. They speak a lot in Chinese. They speak a lot in English. And they speak a lot in like a mix, like Spanglish,
like,
you
know? Pigeon.
Yeah.
And
Hong Kong pigeon.
And by default, the subtitles pop up only when necessary when they say something in Chinese, but you can turn the subtitles on 100% of the time. I don't think they have two whole audio tracks, if that's what you're asking, where you can dub it into 100% Chinese. It's actually like as is. I think it works really well.
Right. Okay. I was thinking of the game that we're going to talk about, which did. Asura's Wrath, which did have an option for like
all Chinese,
Cantonese versus English or something. So yeah.
Oh Jesus, that game's in Cantonese?
I think it said Cantonese. Yeah. So yeah, it is a hybrid. I have the subtitles on for everything, and it's like English in parentheses, translating the random like you know
insult
like Cantonese insult that you know someone said motherfucker and they said it in Cantonese and here's what they were saying. So yeah, it's pretty good. Like. I was worried, like a lot of games, that just the dialogue between these people was just going to be too cartoonish or too caricature of actual real people, but they're pretty believable so far. You know, the guy you play is a fucking badass, and he, like, immediately jumps into, like, being crazy violent, which is kind of like, whoa, okay, I guess that's who I am. I'm a crazy violent guy who handles everything by beating everybody up. But I guess that's how the game is.
Well, you're in the Yakuza, right?
Right.
Triads or something?
Right, but it's almost like he too easily falls into that lifestyle, even though he's an undercover cop who's just trying to, like...
Oh, he is?
...make himself believable as being part of the Yakuza. Jeez. He It doesn't take much effort on his part.
So this is total, like, he's not John Woo style Hong Kong.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, yeah.
He's not completely immoral. And, like, the whole game, the whole story is about him, like, you know, kind of struggling with doing bad things.
Writing
even
that
though
line,
he's not
yes.
a bad guy.
But so far, he's...
Right?
He feels like he's reveling in it.
As far as, like, the combat goes, the combat is mostly hand-to-hand and very visceral.
Yeah.
So when he smashes a dude's face in, like, a... you know, a telephone booth and then slams the door on him or whatever, right? Like, it feels really brutal.
Yeah.
But that
it's not for a diplomatic.
It's because of it's emulating this John Woo Hong Kong action movie style where everything is brutal hand-to-hand combat. Even the cops are always doing that.
Yeah.
So it's just kind of the overblown style. I mean, in America, we're totally desensitized to guns. So sure. You'll see, like, you know, the protagonist shoot up bad dudes like a million times a second and not blink an eye, right? How many dudes did Jack Bauer shoot, right? How
right.
many terrorists? Like a billion.
Few.
A billion, right? And and these Hong Kong action films, they do the same thing, except it's actually a lower quantity because it's mostly with their fist against a table.
Right.
You know? Yep. So it feels more brutal to us, but to them, it's old hat.
Yeah.
So you get used to it, and you take everything with a grain of salt. It's a little silly, but it's actually really pretty well executed overall, I think.
I have to agree. It's pretty good so far. The game, though, that I have been waiting for and excited about is Dishonored, which I've been seeing reviews, and it comes out tomorrow officially. I had this still on my Gamefly queue, so they sent it to me. I kind of forgot I had it on there, so... I kind of fumbled that whole don't have anything on my list, so you will only send me this game. It may be a while before I actually get Dishonored. But now I'm kind of into this game, so I kind of want to like play through it now.
Cool.
The only other game that I wanted to mention, and then I'm pretty much done, besides the game that's going to lead our main topic, is Crashtastic. It's for the PC and Mac. It's in super crazy alpha right now, like Minecraft was when it first came out. You can buy it for like $10. It was brought to my attention by TAG, which stands for Two Awesome Gamers. It's this group of two guys. I think they're Australian. And they are mainly known for doing gameplay videos of Minecraft mods. I mentioned before, like Skyblock and Tekkit and stuff like that. They also do other games, and this was one they just started playing. I just watched like the first video, like 7 minutes of them playing. It's a pretty neat concept. Maybe it's been done before, but basically the whole thing is that you build... sort of like Bad Piggies, where you basically have a dude in a vehicle contraption and you have to build using you know, like bar beams and wheels and rockets and springs, and then your goal is to, like, okay, you must go forward 10 meters or you must go up 10 meters or you must go at least 80 meters per second, and you can build a machine and then hit go.
What's a meter?
It's this crazy like measurement they use in
Never
Europe
heard
and
of
stuff
that.
Yeah. It said 80 meters per second. It did not say 150 feet per second or whatever.
How confusing.
I know. You have to go a certain speed, and it'll tell you if you did or not. So it seemed really cool. You know, it was fun to watch them.
240.
What's that?
240.
Yeah, I didn't actually know the math. I threw out
a
number.
I think it's roughly 3 feet per meter.
Okay,
all right. Something like that, yeah.
This is very important to make this apparent.
Did you hear that the kilogram is losing mass? Did you hear that shit? The kilogram, like at the French Academy of Weights and Measures, that is the kilogram by which all other kilograms are measured. Mm-hmm. That shit is built out of like partially some unstable thing, and it's been losing mass slowly over the last like 500 years.
I did not know that.
That's crazy. Yeah.
That is weird.
They're having to come up with some other way to measure a kilogram or keep making new kilograms because the kilogram with a capital K that they've been measuring is like minusculely, you know, infinitely smaller than it was, you know, 100 years ago when they made it.
I should send a message to the maker of this game to make sure he's taking that into account.
Yeah, totally.
Anyway, it looks cool. It's, you know, it's $10 now for like, you know, probably updates forever. I don't know. It might be an interesting game to at least check out. They seem to be having fun. They seem to make every
game. So
did game
you buy this and try it?
No, I just watched them. Oh, okay. I just watched them play it for 7 minutes. They did a couple of the levels. They make every game seem more fun, I think, just because they're, you know, wisecracking about it and trying stupid things, and they're just funny to
Much
watch.
Like we have done with Asura's Wrath.
Right. Speaking of Asura's Wrath, that leads us into our main topic, which is... those wacky, lovable Japanese developers and the games they make. So we started playing this game that Josh brought unto us called Asura's Wrath, which, man, I don't even know how to describe it. It's basically like an anime.
It's about this guy who's angry.
With some QuickTime events and some God of War fighting. But it's also so much more than that. So Josh, what's your take on this game? Why did you want us to play it?
Well, we've only played like what, five episodes so
but,
far.
But the probably episodes like that we played,
2 hours worth.
Oh my god!
But yeah, it seems batshit, and I like playing like unique batshit stuff.
Batshit like, means in
is literally made
one.
Of refuse from bats.
Section yeah. one, like episode one, the first thing you play. You are falling from a spaceship toward a planet which has a giant mouth erupt out of the side of it. Like
totally
there's
saw
a
that
whole
coming.
Planet the size of Earth
with an immeasurable with impurity
amount
level.
Of impurity. Yes,
everything has an impurity level. All the enemies
it's
have
part
like
of the Goma, which are like these impure beings that are
numerical,
bad, taking over shit.
Some numerical impurity,
you
like
have to
measurable.
Save the Kokura or something. The
there,
homeland.
There are like some mantra.
You're a demigod. There's other demigods. Yeah, it basically has all the hallmarks of like the crazy, epic, everything is over the top, you know.
It's like Dragon Ball.
Over 9,000 like Japanese kind of way of doing things, yeah, like over-exaggerate everything.
It's totally Dragon Ball the video game, except it's not a Dragon Ball video game.
Yeah, except it's a new IP. You don't have to know anything about it.
Yeah.
I thought it'd be fun to jump into a new IP like that. It sounded unique and fun and awesome, like an interactive anime that's just over the top craziness that just keeps topping itself with over the top craziness, which is what I liked about Bayonetta, except I didn't like all the gameplay part of Bayonetta that much.
That sounds familiar.
This is a current trend.
And
I kind of
wanted Bayonetta to be more like this style, what I thought was this style, like just more, watching more cutscenes and. So I thought this would be like that, and it sounds cool, man. So, wanted to play it. I didn't think it was worth $60 though. Yeah. So I waited till it got crazy cheap, and it just got crazy cheap. So, but it's not crazy cheap because supposedly the first DLC is almost a required buy because the game kind of ends in not this cliffhanger state, but it doesn't completely end. And then the first DLC is like the epilogue that you.
Basically the actual ending
should be built into the game and might cost $10 more or something like that.
Yeah, one of the best parts about the game is that like when every episode ends, you know, it like says to be continued as if it was some, you know, episodic series that you had to wait for next week and
or
next week on Asura's Wrath, you know, Asura gets more wrathy.
And we're playing it weekly, which is really appropriate. I think it works well that way.
Yeah.
But yeah, even in between, in the middle of the episodes, it does the little stinger to commercial thing.
Right, yes.
And then when right after the stinger, when it resumes, they repeat a line of dialogue sometimes.
There's like
and there was
so
a narrator
many...
at some point. Like,
yeah, there's so many weird conventions. Like,
oh,
there's
great.
The in-game cutscenes, which is most of the game, right? There are these kind of, you know, fair to midland combat arena type battle scenarios. There's weird, like overdub narration occasionally from some source you're not, you know, that you don't really know who it is. I think that might supposed to be
is
might
your
be
daughter?
Supposed to be his daughter.
Okay,
you know, maybe not. There are also these like flat, static, non-animated, just text reading it like an RPG. Cutscenes that you also have to go through. It's just a weird hodgepodge mishmash of all this, all these, you know, different storytelling techniques.
All the different things layered together does make it seem kind of like a greater value, though. Like, I was actually expecting it to be simpler.
Mm-hmm.
I was expecting it to just be this one long movie with QuickTime events.
Yeah.
And it turns out it's actually like six things.
I kind of wish it were just that. Yeah. You know, Mike was saying he doesn't like the QuickTime events. I would be on board if it were just an anime, right? So we were talking about, should this game have more game elements or fewer, right?
It's a tough call.
And it is a tough call. My sense is I would like it to have fewer, but not to the point where it were just an anime. Because if it was just an anime, then it would just kind of be dumb and I wouldn't want to watch it, right?
Yeah,
the thin veneer of the QuickTime event is at least enough gamey stuff that, and the QuickTime events that they have you do are pretty good. Like, it's not just press a button, although they do have their share of that. They have, like, you know, throw both sticks out to the side to explode another pair of arms out of your back.
Yes, the
and
arm
then
growing.
Push them up to have two more come out of your shoulders, and then slam them together to slam all the arms into a dude or what, you know? So they're kind of tied into the action.
Does that mean that you're a big fan of, like, Dragon's Lair and Space Ace and those kinds of, like, laser discs?
I don't hate those games.
I don't know. There's something about it that makes it feel like it's like whack-a-mole. It's a video game version of whack-a-mole, and I don't know how, like, into whack-a-mole you really are after the age of 5, but I don't know. I don't really like whack-a-mole games because it turns, it's like the Twitch based mechanic of an action game,
yeah.
Like down to, it's distilled down to its least exciting component and its most most punishing element. Like, you either do it at the right time or you're punished, you know? And right. Whereas, like, the battle arena, you know, you could miss a hit here and there, or you could, like, not hit at the right time, or you know, get damaged and you don't die. It's almost like the same kind of thing with the Infinite Runner of the one-hit kill. Like, I don't know. It's just, there's, like,
but
no room. There's, like, no room for error.
But we have yet to fail one of those. Like,
yeah, what you're saying is, like, theory, or as some games of that style, like
Josh put all the spare microphone pop filters on each of his fingers,
he is now pop filter hand.
Big cartoon cartoon hands. It's pretty funny.
Yeah.
So
he's
lovable
Wolverine.
You're talking specifically about Dragon's Lair, right? Dragon's Lair was designed to feed quarters into,
right?
And fail, right? But in this game, like Charles said, in this game, we haven't failed any of those things once that we know of, right?
Right, it's more
and
forgiving.
And in Heavy Rain, which is a more recent example of that genre that we're talking about, I think they do an excellent job on your first playthrough, particularly, of giving you this illusion of, if not an illusion, then, you know, an actual
experience
of not just, like, having fail pass sequences and ending the game, but no matter what you do, even if you fail, like, the story continues,
right?
And it feels like you are guiding the whole story based on what you're doing. You know, it doesn't have very many I think it has none. Heavy Rain has zero end game decisions where you fail to do something and the game is over. It doesn't have any of those. The worst that can happen is you fail to do something and you kill that character, and that character's dead.
That sounds
and
pretty
then
bad.
The game continues because all these other characters are part of the story. And the story works with that character dying in that situation. It's brilliant. I think it was really well executed. Heavy Rain's a classic.
Yeah, I mean, that's a really unique game, and that's also a game that was, like, specifically built to just have that as the interaction mechanic. Whereas, I don't know, there's very little that's interesting about the QTEs they put in here. I'm like just don't put anything in. Just have the action part.
You didn't like the arm stretching?
I like arm stretching. I like going from 2 to 4 to 6 arms. That's an awesome visual sight, but I guess I don't feel the need to move the two sticks to the side, you know, within a 2-second time window to make it happen. Like, I'm fine with just watching it happen. It's still just as ridiculous whether I did some small thing to make it happen or not. I don't know. It doesn't seem to add enough for me to care about it being in there. You might as well just get rid of it.
So I feel
it's so
the opposite,
shallow.
Which is that it's shallow enough that it's not punishing, and I don't feel super stressed about hitting it. And like the God of War is another example, which is very close, which, you know, God of War has a number of those QuickTime events. I think it's one of the most recent games to really popularize that that method of, you know, having a big cinematic moment. Such, you know, if you don't have a QuickTime event, then you're just doing the same attack combo that you always do, right? So in a character action game, you have a number of combos, and maybe you have 5 or 6 or 8 or, you know, 20 in, like, a really, you know, combo heavy game, but you have to learn all of them. So having the QuickTime event allows the character to do a really crazy big cinematic spectacle type move that can involve stuff that you wouldn't necessarily be able to if it were, because you know, maybe it can involve particular aspects of the enemy you're fighting. Like if it has horns, you can swing around the horns, but not every enemy has horns, so that can't be one of your regular move sets, right? So there's utility to having the quick time event. You know, God of War makes you repeat the same quick time event like 3 times to kill a boss, and so it gets kind of boring. Whereas this, it's like you're just watching a movie. Occasionally, it just serves to, the quick time event that you do kind of just serves to bring you into it a little bit more.
Yeah, I think I'm more okay with the God of War arena fighting plus a quick time special move. Like, yeah, that's okay, and I don't have as much problem with it, but I don't know, just the non-interactive cutscenes with 0.5% of the time you have to press a stick to the left. Yeah. I don't know. It's so shallow. I'm like, just get rid of it. It's like, it doesn't really engage me that much. But
I thought it worked really well in Heavy Rain. I think they make you move that stick in weird ways that makes it feel like you're pushing the door open or holding some pressure against someone that's pushing against you, mm-hmm, or any number of things, you know, shouting for your son, right?
Jason!
Press Jason! X to Jason.
Press,
right?
X to Jason.
I thought those things were really engaging, really successful, you know, make you feel like you're making the story happen, not like you're just watching a movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I get what you're saying, Mike, that that it's kind of a throwaway thing, and I think that's
it,
right?
It feels
pretty
throwaway,
but I think,
yeah,
that if in this game, if it wasn't there, it wouldn't be fun or engaging enough for me to stick around, like... It would just be dumb, but the fact that it is there makes it fun. I mean, I think this is a game that is so bad it's good. It's definitely in that camp. I think,
yeah,
we'd all agree with that.
This is an MST 3000 game.
Yeah, you definitely want to sit
I
there
love
and
it
just
because of that.
Make fun of it the whole time.
Yeah.
So,
well, yeah. Well, and speaking of which, I mean, some other Japanese games that I was looking up that are along that line of just like not the usual kind of game that we would play. Cho Aniki, which I'm sure I'm butchering.
That's right.
Was this game for the Saturn that came out, which was basically like a Gradius 2D side-scrolling shooter, except it was like incredibly and I guess unexpectedly homoerotic, where all of the enemies are like there's one enemy which is basically like a dude with, I think, only underwear on, like pile-driving another dude. And he's just up and down, and you shoot him with your ship, and that's like an enemy. And then there's a boss that's totally naked except for just like a chrome plate around his crotch, and he shoots out phallic things at you that you also have to shoot and kill. And it's just, you know, like wow, that was a game that was made, and that was in stores, and people bought that, and that was not like a ROM hack. Because it totally feels like a legitimate ROM hack. And I'm like, okay, that's weird. There's also, remember Feel the Magic?
No.
Yeah, no, you do, because you
don't
played
know
it.
Any of these games.
No, you played it. We both played it when we were actually playing the DS. You probably, you know, downloaded it illegally at some point to check out for 5 minutes, but it was basically a bunch of mini games that used, you know, the stylus and blowing in the microphone, and it was just a bunch of weird, like, seemingly unconnected mini games, but, you know, using the DS. And
it was called Field of Magic?
Feel the Magic.
Oh, Feel the Magic.
Yeah. Remember that game?
XYXX.
Yeah, XYXX or whatever.
Yeah. That shit was tight, man.
That was just
that was super
so
cute. It was
weirdly
like,
Japanese.
It was almost like a dating simulator, too, or something.
Yeah.
I remember. That game was weird.
It was sort of like was it WarioWare? Which,
right,
is also,
yes,
just a bunch of like seemingly unconnected mini games where you do weird stuff only with, you know, the Wiimote.
Did you play WTF? That was a PSP game. I probably not.
Probably not. No.
Yeah, I think it was Work Time Fun.
Yes. Yeah.
It was a bunch of really stupid little mini games.
It was stupid WarioWare type mini games, except it was all, you know, it was like piles of poop instead of Wario stuff, you know.
Yeah.
Again, like Japanese over the top stuff.
I mentioned Catherine. We talked about Catherine several podcasts ago. You know, that's like a dating sim, which is plus a puzzler, which is way more popular in Japan than in America. I'm curious, why do you guys think dating sims are like freaking huge in Japan and not really huge at all here?
The sort of text oriented like reading games are big, and dating sims are you know, kind of a subgenre of that. But like, I bought that game that was part of the Indie Royale bundle that was supposed to be like
Analog
A Hate Story.
Yeah, great title,
right?
Not
the dating sims are certainly a rich field for Japanese weirdness. There's one that that I saw somebody do a playthrough of on YouTube. I didn't watch the whole thing, but it's a dating sim set where you are the only human. You're the only human.
Are there furries in this?
Student? No.
Oh, okay.
In a school full of birds.
Yes.
Not what?
Yes.
Not furry birds. Not human sized
literally birds.
Literally like pigeons and crows.
Wait, but they spoke like, English?
They speak English inexplicably, or they speak Japanese. Yeah. Your teacher is like a heron. They're just birds.
Wait, are you trying to date the birds?
Yeah, you're trying to romance the birds. You're like the first ever human student.
Wow.
Oh, man.
The birds have a school, and you go
are
there.
Are the birds really cute?
They're just cartoon.
Dude, shut up. What are you talking about?
No, they're birds. They're not. Like, they're
are
not
they anthropomorphized?
Not
they,
at all.
Do they have boobs? Is that what you're asking? You're
they
asking,
are drawn.
Are there actual boobs?
Birds? They're just. It's just like an illustration of a pigeon. That's all it is. It's not a cute one or anything.
And that's supposed to get you excited to want to win, to date them?
I have no idea.
Okay, so dating. So, yeah, but why are they so goddamn popular there? I don't.
No, it's the opposite. It's why are they not popular here?
Okay, so
and
why aren't they popular
is
here?
American sexual repression in our culture.
We're okay. And Japanese don't have any sexual repression?
Japanese have vast and strange sexual repression.
Yeah, it's a different type.
I mean, they're just much better at fighting that and exploring
in culture,
it.
No.
I mean, the Japanese sexual... sorry to keep interrupting you, Josh. It's super male-dominated, yeah. Right? Drastically male-dominated. Japanese porn is all about the woman feeling like completely detached from it and like being basically in pain the whole time.
Yes.
Like it's a very, very like violent, male dominated, weird culture sexually.
Don't you just want to go visit Japan now?
Japan is the most alien culture to all other cultures in the US. I learned this in one of my college courses. They did like a, you know, like a personality profile of members of different cultures. So they did, you know, the U.S. and France and Germany. And like they did, you know, 200 countries, right? And they gave them personality profiles. And Japan is the most statistically separated from all others.
Based on what? Like what kind of questions?
I don't know the questions that were asked. But it's
would
personality.
Would you have sex with a bird?
Profile type questions, right? It's those, like what's the Myers-Briggs personality
Kinsey?
Profiles?
Kinsey thing?
No, it's not. It's not about sex. It was just about like cultural.
Yeah,
aspects.
Yeah, Myers
like,
Briggs.
Yeah, that kind of stuff. They did that, and Japanese is the most separated, just statistically from Western cultures tend to blob up, and some Eastern cultures tend to blob up, and African and whatever, and then like Japan is like way out on one. It's a total outlier to all other.
So that definitely leads me to two other games. One that already came out. I'm sure you probably heard about this one. I think it was also for the DS. It was translated as, at least one way, Thump Thump Witch Judgment.
Oh, no.
which involved, as you can tell by the name, using your stylus to massage certain areas of people to bring them to an excitement level of which I don't really want to talk about anymore.
Really?
Yes.
To determine if they're witches.
I thought you...
To determine whether they were witches
what?
Or something. Yes.
You brought it back to the witches. I thought you were going to say it involved, like, throwing them into ponds to see if they floated.
No. This was their litmus test. Like, whether, I guess, if you rub them and they got excited.
You poke them with the stylus on a... This was a legitimate DS game.
And, of course, as always, the females all look like they're 12. Uh-huh. And it's incredibly creepy. Yes. And yet, that is what gets made and is legit. That's not like, well, once again, ROM hack black market stuff like it would be in America.
Yeah.
So, and then there's another one called Gal Gun, which I don't think is out yet, which is very similar, except you're shooting.
Is that one? I thought that was just a shooter.
Right. It's shooting instead of rubbing, except it's shooting, like, pheromones at women in order to excite them. And I'm just like, Jesus Christ, what is going on over there? This is the discourse. I don't know. It's okay. Anyway, now to bring this back around to some let's bring up like the level of morality here for a second. So another weird game though that I think we all like is the Katamari Damacy series. Now that's a very interesting game, which basically involves a dude picking up garbage into, or not garbage, but just items in a world into a huge ball that gets bigger and bigger and bigger and gets measured, and that's like what your score is based on, like the circumference of your junk ball. And has an amazingly awesome soundtrack, and you know, you're like a prince and you get talked
to
by
the prince of the cosmos.
And there's the king of the cosmos and he talks in exaggerated, awesome dialogue. So that's really fun. You guys like that game, right?
So I don't want to be a hater, but I want to ask
you're going to hate on that game?
I want to ask you what platform you played it on.
I think I played it on the
and which
360?
Instance? Like which game version?
Probably the first one.
Did you
own it? I think the first one. No, I didn't own it. But I played it on like probably played it on your machine or something.
How about you, Charles?
No, I only ever played it at friend's house
for like 5 minutes.
Exactly. Yeah,
I think it's I played it on iOS demo too.
You play
it
one time for a half hour. It's a good game. Get it.
Just checking that we're on the same page here. I mean, I think it's a neat 5 minute thing too. But yeah. I wouldn't say it's a great game with universal praise, like you said. In terms of, I didn't buy it, and I wouldn't play it for more than an hour.
Yeah.
You know what
I
mean?
As a game.
I appreciate its concept. Yeah. It's really cute.
It's like an art project. Like,
I tried to play it once or twice.
Yeah. And the guy who made it also made Nobi Nobi Boy.
Yes.
Which is even crazier. And yet I think...
Very similar, right?
Very similar in its just like... It's like a toy box, like sandbox kind of game. But that was also very enjoyable to play on your machine for about half an hour.
These are like games that are fun to show people that have never seen anything like it.
Yeah, it's a good entry into video gaming.
And then just make them play and be like, what the hell is happening?
Dude, we had so much fun playing Nobi Nobi Boy. That game is so weird.
We did, but that game should only be played in a group with people like...
Yeah.
Preferably who are stoned.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, and one more that I wanted to mention before I mention the last one. So the penultimate mention is the Ace Attorney, Phoenix Wright Ace Attorney games. That's another game that I never bought, but probably played for 5 minutes.
Goddamn, that's one of my favorite games.
Okay, so you
DS.
Think that that's a purchasable game.
Yeah, I played
game.
All the way through multiple of those and
really?
Bought them legitimately.
Objection.
Yeah, they're fucking great.
So they're
those
all different
games.
Enough to like warrant purchasing them all? They're not...
Well, it's like it's a series. It's a...
It's like a story.
The concept is good
story.
Enough that it could be, executed repeatedly like a good TV show, like a fucking Law and Order or whatever, right? It's a crime drama game that's interactive.
Yeah.
So you're doing the investigation and then you're doing the prosecution in the courtroom.
You're both detective and attorney.
Yeah. It's super cool. It's unique. It's great, and I'm glad
there
they keep
have
making
been
them.
A lot of them in Japan too. A lot more.
Yeah,
than
I haven't played.
There's
a
even
of them.
A Broadway play musical based on it. That's how big it is.
If they came out on my Vita,
actually on Broadway, or
not Broadway. There's a stage musical of it in Japan.
I think they're doing a movie here.
I'm sure
they are. They're doing a live action movie,
dude. Yeah. But who's gonna be Phoenix Wright?
I'm so excited.
Who could possibly play that?
I haven't been following it, but it is.
I don't even know.
It is publicly known.
So
who plays Sulu? The guy who plays Sulu in the new, is that Cal Penn?
Or other guy.
The other guy?
Not Cal Penn.
Harold.
Whatever the other guy. Harold, Harold,
not Kumar.
Right. Yes. Whatever that guy's name is.
He could totally do it.
There was also one game that I just wanted to mention because I thought it was funny. And they say it's in the Guinness Book of World Records for longest video game title. But I went to Guinness's website and tried to find it. Man, either... video games don't exist in their records, or their search page or their search function is the worst search function
ever. I
heard
they contracted that out to Sony.
I thought I was going to say they only sell books.
Because when I finally found it, I couldn't read it. There was an error on the screen. No, I couldn't find it in searching, so I can't confirm this is true. But the translated title of it, of this Japanese game that I don't really know anything about except the title, is...
The Idler Wheel.
No, yeah, it's not that long. It doesn't beat Fiona Apple. White Princess II, Love Adventure in the School that Follows the Principle of Convenience, where it's okay to stray from the path or stay on the path. That's the full title of that game.
In Japanese, it's only like 4 syllables.
Though. Right. Yeah, exactly. So that's pretty awesome.
It's
so,
one kanji.
What did you just Google, like, batshit Japanese games?
Yeah. I went through about 5 different lists just to kind of corroborate
some
crazy games. There were many, many others that were mentioned, but these are the ones that I found that I wanted to talk about. So my question to you guys...
I'm not putting all those in the show notes.
No, that's fine. As host, because I want to at least have somewhat of a discussion about this, like, do you think that American developers, or even just non-Japanese developers, should try more crazy shit like this? Or do you think, you know, we're good enough with Japan? If you want crazy shit, play Japanese-made games. Or more people should be this adventurous. Like, this is a direction we should go in, or we should this should stay in Japan.
I think some of our games seem crazy batshit to them. They must, right?
Like what?
I think we're making just as many batshit games, except in the opposite direction. Like
Madden 2013. Like, what's up
like
with that?
Like Britney's dance experience, or I don't know.
No, that's not weird enough.
That shit is...
That's just a dancing game with a pop star. That's like low-hanging Japanese fruit.
No, the issue, though, is how they are, like... We view Japan as being way off and a statistical outlier. Yeah. Like, they are that far separated from us.
As we are from them.
Right. So yeah. So things that we feel totally normal about would seem... Like, Call of Duty probably seems, like, weird and crazy. Like, why would you want to do that? There's action all the time. There's no story. You're not dating any birds. What the fuck?
Why do you want to shoot Germans in every game?
Right, yeah.
That's an interesting viewpoint, I guess. So you really think that they think all of our games, or most of our games, are as batshit crazy as we think theirs are?
I think that...
Because they make a lot of normal games, too. They don't just make
these
crazy
games. What do
you mean, normal
games? Well, like,
okay.
What's normal?
Okay, well, they made Super Mario Brothers. I mean, yeah. I wouldn't say that's a crazy game, but it's
no,
a Japanese
game.
But
that's fucking crazy.
Right, because you're an normal Italian plumber who goes down pipes and jumps on mushrooms.
That is only normal because it was first, right? Like, that created a genre called the platformer. So it's only called that because there were platforms in Mario.
So you think rubbing 12-year-olds to find out whether they're witches will be the new norm eventually?
I'm not.
Is that what you're saying?
No, that is not what I'm saying. It's hard to draw that conclusion from what I said.
No, I just did it. Totally cake.
No, that's not like going to become the new normal. It's just that the things that we find weird that they are doing, they also find shit that we're doing weird.
But at the same time...
The idea of do we want game developers to create more weird games? I do. I want game developers to create more weird gameplay mechanics and experiment and try stuff. That's why I'm psyched when Nintendo comes out with, you know, a two-screen handheld and a Wiimote and, you know, all that stuff. Like, I like the new stuff and the different stuff because I'm hoping that something comes out that's totally freaking awesome and revolutionizes everything, you know? Microsoft is starting to use... two Kinects hooked up. They have a patent on like a holodeck room that uses projection and multiple Kinects to track your movement through space really well instead of like okay when you're going back and forth but not great, you know.
And that's cool, but that's hardware. So to go back to software though, like is there say like a very popular Japanese genre like the dating sim that you wish were more American centric?
Yes,
versions
so
of.
Let's talk about Catherine instead of the freaking witch like, game, please, as an example.
Like, okay? Like Jersey Shore, because, the dating sim.
Because
it's not a bad idea.
What I was saying earlier about the culture is that in like American pop culture, we're sexually repressed. We don't have nipples on TV, right? But we can
show that person's head.
We
off.
Can show like serial killers slicing bodies up and stuff at 7 p.m. on major networks, right? And that's different than a ton of the European countries and some Asian countries. Particularly for games, because games have been seen here as a child's activity, and so they're constantly seen as through the eyes of like parents buying for kids or whatever. And then even like M-rated games like Call of Duty and Halo or whatever, like more parents are okay with letting a 10-year-old like shoot terrorists in the head than see a nipple,
a breast,
right? So we literally are unable to have any responsible or irresponsible dealings with sexual matter in games in America. It's like it's so
even
rare.
Even dealing with non-sexual matter, but it's just something that could potentially be sexualized.
That's true.
Like just a naked person.
Totally true.
Can't
appear. Like
the
freaking statue that had to get covered up in the courthouse by a congressman
like,
who was offended by the statue.
That was started with an A. What was his name?
Asshole.
Goddamn.
Anyway, so no like research. When you bring up the extreme cases, yeah, you know,
yeah, lady,
it's just
lady
like
justice.
We have extreme cases of violence here. Like we have the Slaughterhouse Games or something, right? But we also have like Call of Duty, which is like just typical war,
realistic
or whatever,
violence,
right? And so I would say Catherine maybe is a bit more of like a dealing with the subject matter in a more responsible way, in a more mature way. And I think Catherine is brilliant for its storytelling possibilities that are not possible with an American game.
Right.
Yeah, I'm really proud that it got imported and had some sales here, that it was successful. Like, and I do think more American developers should do games like that, but I don't know why it doesn't happen. It's crazy.
You know, Cliffy B, I saw an interview with Cliff Bleszinski.
Who just left Epic,
who
by
just
the way.
Left Epic Games.
Taking a sabbatical.
Well, no, he took a sabbatical a year ago.
Oh, okay.
He left the company. He's right. No longer a part of it.
You never know. He might come back. I mean
Steve
Jobs,
resigned.
Steve Jobs was with Apple, then wasn't,
yeah,
and then was
he would
again.
Have to be rehired for that to happen. Yeah. But yeah,
he'll probably
was,
start his own company.
He
someday.
Did take a sabbatical a year ago from Epic.
Yeah.
Anyway, I heard an interview with him several years ago where he was talking about the things that he wanted to do with games, and the thing he mentioned was an actual love story. So I think that there are American developers who are trying to do that. I don't even think, I mean, with the difference between our cultures, the degree to which any of those games can be perceived as, you know, conveying a real love story, maybe to a Japanese person, the dating sims do, you know, give them that sense. To me, it seems goofy and kind of ridiculous, most of the ones that I've had any, you know, familiarity with.
Especially the birds one.
The birds one was up there.
That is for the birds.
But yeah, I think that there hasn't been a video game that's really done it. I don't know, maybe Mass Effect came close.
I was just thinking, as soon as you said that, I haven't played this game, but I've heard lots of people say that it may be that. Is this indie game called To the Moon?
Yeah.
I heard that it's like one of the best like emotional stories, and it is about, I think, a relationship between man and his wife or something like that.
Heard the title, yeah.
And so I'm really curious. Like, I've been curious to play it, and I don't know. It might be worth actually trying it out now, especially since everybody talked about it, and then see whether that fits the bill. But but that's really rare, and you don't really see games like that.
Certainly not a major game.
It will not sell in the Call of Duty numbers or the Madden numbers, probably.
Mass Effect and Dragon Age, like BioWare is doing the best job here that I know of. But those games get sold on their sci-fi alien shooting, or their
dragon,
fantasy orc slaying, dragon slaying,
heads. Yes,
right. And the relationshipy stuff is a small part of those games.
Yeah,
and
so
I think
so
there
that
is
it gets
a market
called out, like in forum posts and stuff, as like being the shitty part of the game, right? By some players.
By some, but the opposite by others, right? I think there's a market for making games that are focused on that part and subtract the dragon slaying, but it's not happening right now.
Well, and I think it's also because it's really fucking hard to do something like that. It's really hard to gamify.
It's harder
human relationships than it is to gamify shooting aliens in the face.
But it's not hard to tell a story, right?
They're typically more text heavy.
Yeah,
and
it's hard to tell a story that you have.
There's been a tradition of these text heavy games that deal with relationships like that in Japan, and there isn't a tradition of that here.
Yeah,
It would certainly be something where I think a game could involve potentially side characters that have a love story and a relationship that perhaps you affect or interweave with, but like doing it where the player character actually falls in love with someone would be very difficult, I think. Right?
Oh.
I mean, because they would literally have to make you playing the game like their character enough to feel the empathy that your character is supposed to
feel
toward that
person.
We
do it in like rom-coms, like constantly.
Yeah.
Right? Don't you think
but
it's
we don't have any
equally possible in a game?
But we don't have a an interactive element to the rom-com. Like, we don't have a character in the rom-com.
But rom-coms are all about you putting your shoes in one of the main characters, like, face, your feet in their
mouths,
shoes.
And your pancreases in their kidneys.
You putting your feet in their
shoes. It's about you headbutting
their
mouth's face.
Oh, God. Best billboard ever.
No, I was just thinking, you're making me think of this other indie game that's online only. I cannot remember the name of it right now, but it basically involves you going to, like, a dinner party with a couple, and they're having some problems, and you can type whatever you want. You can ask them questions and say whatever you want, and it has, like, a fairly sophisticated AI to where what you say directs what happens to that couple, and depending on what you can say, you can either have them, like, have a happy ending and stay together, or you can have them break up or have them ask you to leave, you know, like,
cool.
And that's pretty damn close to, like, what we're talking about, like a more realistic relationship, yeah, couple. That's where cool. You have some control over it.
So there are Western developers who, yeah, are doing,
it's just very hard
and
to
cool
do
shit.
You know, it's very hard. I think we easily see through the AI and we say, oh, well, you know, a real person wouldn't react that way. They wouldn't say that. That's not right. Whereas, you know, you can model what a laser beam does to an alien's face, you know, till kingdom come. And it's really hard to, like, argue against,
right,
whether that's realistic or not, but you can easily say, no, a human being would not respond in that way.
The
illusion is broken, and then your game is over. So I think it's a huge risk to try that, and that's why more people don't do it. So it's much easier to shoot shit. That's why billions of games involve that.
Maybe Cliffy B will do it. Maybe he'll be the guy who did Gears of War and the first game to really represent love.
The first rom-com AAA, yeah, like, console game.
Nice.
It feels like a rom-com should work, right?
I think
they
it
should
would
be
work.
Able to, because
like
they
Catherine,
sold,
except without the block puzzle shit and made by an American studio.
They sold all those Wiis to moms, right?
And,
like,
yeah. Oh, so totally, yeah, yeah. You want a Days of Your Lives, Guiding Light
not
kind
a
of
soap
game?
Opera necessarily,
on it could be on iPhone or something.
Yeah, they.
Yeah. Oh yeah, touch interface. Yeah.
There's got to be a market.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Let's do it.
Well, I think
Escort Mission Games.
We're gonna make a AAA
company started
rom com.
Yeah, we're all gonna be romance writers next
yes,
week
because that's what we do best. All right. Well, I think that was a good show. I think that was a good discussion.
I think so too.
Do you also think that, Josh? Do you agree that was a good discussion?
No.
That we just had? All right.
Contrarian.
Well, two-thirds overall.
Your impurity level is immeasurable.
your discordance level is off the charts right now. So, everybody listening, go to theescortmission.com where you can find all of our podcasts, and you can buy stuff through our Amazon link. Check us out on the social media places that you know and love. Send us mail.
Social media places.
The social media web place spaces. Send us email so we can do the mailbag theme another week. No mailbag theme. So disappointed.
And thank you so much for buying the Amazon stuff, because now we have these wonderful pop filters.
And hopefully you didn't hear a lot of popping this show, less than
I'll
before.
Take a picture of Josh's pop filter hand.
Yes,
and,
we'll make a non-podcast post and put some pictures so you can see us do this, because you want to see us do this. I think that's it. Any parting thoughts, guys? Anything you want to say?
Thanks for listening.
Have a good week.
Lates.
Buttery not stuck.